This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Oh, that's a throwback.
Today's guest is Will Postumus, founder and CEO of Big Creative. Big consults with teams and sports at the intersection of creative, content, and business leadership. Whether it's new technology, infrastructure, or people, Big works to help identify needs and support with each team's business goals in mind. Darius, you want to do the intro?
No.
Call the shot.
51. That was terrible. As usual, I purposely did that.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step by step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today. All right, excited today to have a conversation with Will Postumus, founder of Big Creative and big proponent of collaboration in the industry, and has worked with a lot of super talented people and building his team at Big Creative as well. So, Will, excited to have you here, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Would love to hear a little bit more about your background and how you got started in the sports side of the industry.
Sure. I'll try and fast track it because it's a winding road. But I got into this actually when I was a little kid. I used to go. My dogs are going to try and join this podcast, by the way. Sorry.
That's if you can. We welcome pets on the show.
I got two barkers. I used to go. I've got a brother who's 11 years older than me, and he played baseball and basketball in high school. And we used to go watch him play when I was, 5-6 years old. And I'd be running around under the bleachers with the other kids and the other little brothers and sisters. But they always, at the high school, we grew up in Portage, Michigan, small southwest part of Michigan. They would turn off all the lights and they would turn on spotlights and they would swing the spotlights around and play music and kind of do like a big intro for the basketball team. And this was 1994. So probably trying to rip off the Bulls and their intros that they were doing then. They'd have a student out there in a tuxedo announcing the introductions. And I remember I would stop playing and I would run and I would just watch that because I thought that was so cool. And fast forward to when I was in high school, that had stopped. For some reason, that tradition had gone away. And so I went to the athletic director when I was a freshman and I was like, why don't we do the cool like lights out basketball stuff anymore? And he was like, you want to do it? You can do it. So my high school hired me to be the DJ, the PA announcer, and kind of the MC of all of our arena sports then in high school. So we kind of brought that like vibe back to high school basketball in Portage, Michigan. I was able to hire another student to like be my DJ while I did the hosting and MCing. And I ended up, my guidance counselor kind of told me what happened to that kid that used to be the guy in the tuxedo and MC. He went to Arizona State University for broadcasting school. And I was like, cool. I followed in his footsteps for these high school games. I'm going to do the same thing. And so I ended up going out to ASU for broadcasting school and got a ASU radio show talking about ASU baseball. I had played high school baseball and a little bit of college baseball at Western Michigan before I went to ASU. I get out there and I have this ASU baseball radio show. Do that for a semester. And I kind of think like, that's my path. I'm going to be on the radio calling baseball. If I can't play it, I'm going to call it. And that's going to be my future. And I get, after a semester doing that, I get an email for internship opportunities at the Arizona Diamondbacks. I was like, okay, this is cool. There's an opportunity to work for a Major League Baseball team. And they had just started DBTV, which was in 2008. They put the brand new HD video board that you see in center field at Chase Field. That was a brand new HD control room in 2008, was like top of the line. It was the second biggest board in sports. And I had an opportunity to get an internship to be involved in that. So got the internship And that quickly turned into a full-time job with the Diamondbacks while I was still going to school at ASU. And that was the launching pad for me. I spent 4 years with the D-backs in DBTV and game operations and kind of learning what I was doing back in high school and watching as a kid. Now on the biggest stage in Major League Baseball, working with national anthem singers and mascots and special guests and things, but then also getting to direct the show for DBTV, call cameras, run the control room. And I really fast tracked to the front of the line in that experience. Like normally, you know, you get on the crew, you're gripping, you run camera, you find a spot in the control room doing clip playback or replay, and then you finally work your way into the director's chair. But I had a great boss, a guy named Rob Weinheimer, who's still the VP of broadcasting for the Diamondbacks, who saw something in me and gave me a shot and put me in the chair. And that was extremely valuable experience at that time, just being so fresh, but also really eager. I obviously knew baseball from being a player and kind of understanding some great things. He gave me full ownership of like music direction and, you know, picking and choosing certain music tracks for certain videos and moments in stadium. And it really kind of grew up fast in that control room at Chase Field and after I moved out to Arizona. So spent 4 years kind of really honing my craft and starting to understand what game operations and game entertainment looked like in pro sports at that point. And there's a lot of job hopping that happened after that. I grew up in Michigan, like I said, and had an opportunity to take a job with the Detroit Red Wings, who had made playoff 21 consecutive times. And I grew up watching them and a huge fan. And I played hockey as a kid too. So I took a chance, moved back to Michigan, worked for the Wings, then bounced around in Detroit. One thing that I think is important to kind of touch on is game operations and event presentation was like the only content creation that teams owned themselves at that point in time. There was no digital social media content. We did a little bit of like our own commercials. We produced, you know, TV commercials and local radio spots and things like that. But there was like the regional broadcasters, Fox Sports Arizona when I was at the D-backs. And then there was in stadium. Major League Baseball owned all the rights to everybody's websites, Facebook page. If you wanted to post a video to your website, it was like a 2-week approval process at that point, which was just crazy.
Thanks for highlighting how old we are. We like to talk about that on the podcast from time to time.
You know, we got to call it out.
Pre-digital, you know. Social times, yes.
But I think what's like cool about that is we were the only in-house creatives at that point in time. And so once digital and social came about, it was like, hey, all the game presentation folks, like you're the only video people that we have that make stuff. So now you got to make all this digital social content too. And so I was kind of getting pulled in that direction in my career, less about the game presentation and more about digital social content, because that's what was needed. And it was an interesting way, like fast track again, you know, past that time. And my last full-time role in the industry was director of creative and video at the Miami Dolphins. And it was my job to own the in-stadium presentation for all events at Hard Rock Stadium, but specifically Miami Dolphins football games. But I also oversaw all of our video and content team. And that was, I mean, I was doing two huge jobs in one role, and we were putting out some game weeks, up to 100 unique pieces of video content to support our digital and social strategy. So I'm like, I'm managing a team of 15. And then it was like me and one other person, and then the engineering staff who were focused on Dolphins football, which seems to be like a huge imbalance. You know, you guys know how important NFL football game production is, and every single game matters so much, and home field advantage. And so that was like, that was kind of at an apex where it was like, listen, we really need to break these teams out into specific specialties and have the ability to like own this part of the business and then also own digital and video content. So I stepped away from the Dolphins in 2019 because I was just kind of, I was burnt out at that point. It was a 15-year career of running hard in sports and just needed a break at that point. But it seems like that was also a time where like, there was a fracture between digital content creation again, and that being its own little pod of creatives focused on digital and social content. And then game presentation, especially in the NFL, was like getting a renewed focus and like, hey, we really need to build a team around these 10 home events that we're going to have. And it was a good time to step away. Obviously, COVID happened the next year, and the rest is history with us starting Big Creative. But yeah, that was, I don't know if I took a breath in that whole thing.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you met John, who you work with again now, when you were at the Diamondbacks.
I did, yes. So John and I, he was the team photographer and I was a lowly game ops intern. He started in 2007, so the year before I did. I started in 2008. And what was awesome about John and I is like we really bonded over being like two in-house creatives who were wanting to experiment with motion. Like we were all in Apple Motion at that point in time. We weren't even in the Adobe suite yet. I'm cutting videos on Final Cut. He had amazing photography equipment that at that point in time was starting to be able to shoot video too. So we're shooting on, you know, DSLRs and doing our own in-house commercials and things like that. And we pushed the boundaries of like what we were creating at that point in time internally and doing some really fun and cool stuff and kind of bonded over that. But also we both would stay after games and run. So like John has been on some awesome like health and weight loss journeys, and it's been a part of our friendship to like be on those together. And 2011 was a crazy year for the D-backs. We opened up our own spring training facility here in Scottsdale, Arizona, which was a huge undertaking for us. And then we also hosted the MLB All-Star game. So we were just at the stadium constantly, and we would stay afterwards and then we would run the concourse. Chase Field's a cool ballpark to run in because if it's nice enough, the roof's open and you get fresh air. And if it's too hot, they close it and air condition it. And then there's a pool out in right center field. So once in a while after we were done running, we jump in the pool too. So we kind of we bonded over that, but also just a desire to do creative stuff together. Went our separate ways when I went back to Michigan, but then reunited at the Miami Dolphins and kind of rekindled that creative partnership and friendship. And Big Creative was actually like an inside joke back in the Chase Field days. We used to call ourselves Big Carabiner Productions, which is like a different story that I don't need to get into, but Big was like our thing. We're both big guys and we thought that was a kind of a cool thing to latch onto. And, you know, here we are, today, Big Creative exists. We all have our like, if I started an agency, who would be on my team? You know, we all have that like pipe dream and we're kind of doing it now, which is really cool. But yeah, John is my creative counterpart. He actually officiated my wedding. So he married my wife and I. He's a part of the family for sure. And there's no project that I've ever worked on that didn't get better when I got input from him. And I think he'd say the same thing about working with me. So he's a key part of the Big Creative team for sure.
A lot of people, when, you know, we always ask the question like, oh, so, you know, going back, like, when did you know? You knew almost from the very beginning that you wanted to do this thing. At what point did you like really know, like, hey, I want to make a career out of this though? Like, hey, this is fun. Like, you do the high school video and you see your brother, you know, as a kid, you go to college. But when did you know, like, hey, I can really turn this thing into like longevity?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm happy that I have like a specific moment in time. So when I was doing the stuff in high school, it was just something that I did to make a little money. Like they paid me to do it, which was cool. But also I just wanted to be around my friends that I played baseball with in the spring, but they were like the basketball players. So like I got to kind of be around and engaged in that. And also it was like cool to pick songs that made my friends and the other students like dance in the student section and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was the moment that I was like, whoa, this is bigger than what I think it is they, on senior night, they did like a special program that had everyone's like senior bios and stuff in it. And they put me in it as like a member of the team. And I'm like there in my like little suit, and it talked about like my contributions to the program. And I was like, okay, so there is something here that's like bigger than me just like talking on the microphone and press and play. Like there's value to contributing to the event experience and potentially, you know, providing a home court advantage in that case. So that like moment when I remember seeing that book and going like, whoa, this is something more than just like playing music for my friends. There's something I can make of this. And that was really what helped cement my decision to want to go to ASU. And shortly after that, so ASU does regional orientations. They don't make everybody fly out to Arizona to do it. So I was driving to a regional orientation in Chicago, and I had played travel baseball and high school baseball. And I had a shoulder injury my senior year, so I didn't think that I was going to be playing anymore. So I was like focused on going to school. I'm driving to Chicago to do that orientation, and I get a call from the head baseball coach at Western Michigan University, which is in Kalamazoo, which is basically where I grew up. And I had an offer to join the team. And I kind of like decided, I was like, you know, I can always go to school, but I can't always play college baseball. So I'm going to take the chance and, you know, do that thing. So I went to orientation. I met my future counselor at ASU and kind of got to know the program. And was like, I'm not coming now, but I'll come one day. And ended up doing the baseball thing at Western Michigan. They paid for my shoulder surgery. I went through rehab and then went through my sophomore year and just decided like, okay, it's time to hang it up. Like my shoulder's not getting better. I really want to go out to school. And so eventually, you know, took that chance and moved out to ASU for my junior and senior year. And my brother played semi-pro baseball in the Seattle Mariners organization, and watching him play my whole life and trying to follow in his footsteps. He never made it to the bigs. He was in AAA with the Mariners, and that was as far as he made it. And then my second semester out at ASU, I get the job with the Diamondbacks. So I'm always like still to this day telling like, man, I got to the big leagues a lot faster than you did. so it's a fun, you know, thing that I can kind of be proud of and hang my hat on. But yeah, like seeing that program and me being in there with the players was like, okay, I got to make something of this for sure.
I always like to ask former athletes whether your last days were in, you know, high school or college or pros. Like, how did your experience of being an athlete prepare you for this industry?
I think that's a great question. I think understanding how outside forces have an impact on your performance or your mental state or your mood or whatever. You know, I used to like go up in the press box before our high school baseball games and plug in my iPod and play music just so we had something going during warmups and batting practice and things. And so I think just like having an understanding of like the athlete mindset and what goes into game day gives me just a little bit of insight into like, what would I do if it were me down there or in this moment? Like what would help me? You know, we do a lot of work with NFL teams now at Big, and like the music and the timing is so key to NFL games, especially with supporting the defense, but also knowing like, what does our offense need here? Like, we really do need the fans to be quiet because they're trying to communicate and things. So I think just having that on-field insight plays into like the psychology in some of the decision-making, especially when it comes to event presentation. And then on the content side, I think like building trust with athletes and making sure like we're making decisions about what we're doing that is not going to put them in a position that's going to hinder their performance, right? Like we can't, for the sake of trying to chase clicks or views or engagement, we can't put the athlete in a position where it's going to interfere with what they're doing. So I think that's always helped me like understand what my guardrails are from a creative and storytelling perspective to protect the athlete, because they've got a job to do too.
We've all been around sports for quite some time. You've seen it at different levels, right? You know, from going to ASU, working in many different professional organizations, how much have you seen over time, like change and shift? You kind of touched on it a little bit, like, oh, this is back when we were the only creative entity of the, And now it's like everything is has like ballooned and blossomed into where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, from a like a team and a league and just a global need for content, there's never been a better time to be a creative, I think, especially if you're into sports. Now, there's peaks and valleys and there's caveats to that for sure. But like every organization just constantly needs content, whether it's still graphics, motion graphics, photography, video, long form storytelling, short form, social, like all these platforms matter to fan engagement and they're super valuable. And they're like the amount of investment that we've seen teams continue to make and leagues continue to make in content is only growing. It's only continuing to grow. So I think that it's an incredible time right now to be a creative in sports. I think that there's a shift that's happening with the leadership change. Like the people like us who grew up in the industry and saw that first shift, now we're moving into positions of power where we understood what it was like to like be a staff of one. You know, the term like predator, producer, editor, or shredder, producer, shooter, editor, like mm-hmm. these backpack journalists that started this whole thing are now getting into these leadership roles where we have the power to influence the budget, to influence the amount of people on our staff, to protect, you know, working hours to some degree. Like I feel, even though I'm not in the front office anymore, as the president and CEO of Big Creative, I feel a tremendous responsibility to make sure that our clients, when I have a chance to talk to a CMO or, you know, a VP of content and communication, I'm advocating for me 20 years ago. You know what I mean? Like I'm advocating for those who are getting in the business and need to be given better resources, time management, expectations, that kind of stuff than what we had, because with all the need for content that we talked about a second ago comes it's a very slippery slope where like that can be abused and people can just be constantly asked for stuff and to-do lists grow and priorities shift. And so I think it's, like I said, never been a better time to be a creative in sports, but also there is a paradigm shift that's happening with like the leadership changeover. And now, you know, you're seeing like chief content officers, like those positions didn't exist, yeah. Right? Like people whose job it is to like own and manage that vertical and they have a seat at the table now, which is a big deal. So like the projects that we're getting and the work that we're doing, which we'll talk about a little bit more, I'm sure. But, you know, having the ability to influence leadership and let people know, like, your expectations here are wrong. Like, this is what the budgets need to be. This is what your staff size should be. These are your comparables in different industries. I think that that's a really good thing. It's just, it's going to take some time to work through the shift. But I think it's on the right track.
With what you said, like we're doing like all of this content, right? Like you mentioned your time at the Dolphins doing like 100 pieces of content in a week. Mm-hmm. Are we doing too much content?
I think so. I think like we've said on our side, whether it was at the Dolphins or in hindsight, like I think we can do less better. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like do less stuff, but do better stuff at the same time. What you gain in time and perspective to ideate and make things, let's use that time to make stuff that's impactful and it's going to grow the brand. The tough thing with like social media and the algorithms and needing to stay relevant and stuff, there's a need to constantly be on and constantly be putting stuff out there and having an opinion and having a voice. But I think there's an opportunity to give people a cell phone and creative freedom and give them guidelines and say like, go be playful on TikTok. But that doesn't necessitate a whole production staff or a whole production plan, like that, that vertical can be owned and done in a great job. But then like over here where we're making long form storytelling content or something that's really supposed to be deep and meaningful, and is going to create new fans and things like that, take your time on it and make sure that you're doing it the right way and not trying to rush to meet self-inflicted deadlines. Like, oh man, how many of us even now like create these like random deadlines that we feel like we have to hit that are there, there's no rhyme or reason for it. They're just like, oh, we got to get this thing out. We just made an announcement, a partnership announcement yesterday that like, I was like, we got to get this out at Thursday at 1 o'clock. And Ashley on the Zero G side, she was like, no, we don't. Like, it's cool. We don't have to do that. So it's just, I think, keeping ourselves in check and making sure that like, let's do less better. I think that's a good way to phrase it.
Kind of similar to what one of Darius's questions, is there anything that you maybe equipment or process that you used when you just started that would be foreign to someone just coming into the industry now?
Oh, great question. Love it.
Flip camera.
Oh, that's a throwback.
You remember those?
Oh, absolutely.
We had like a solid 18 months of flip camera content that we were using and producing stuff with, which is scary to think about.
I saw someone use one of those like for something, like someone did a video or something not long ago, but it was a flip camera.
That was great, man. Had a little USB dongle that popped out on it, plug it into your computer. I mean, process wise, I don't know. We were an early adopter at the Dolphins of Showflow, which now is like an industry standard scripting software that like blew minds. Cause I did 82 MLB scripts in Excel for 4 years in a row. Ooh. And that was so much time spent wasted and like manually changing cells and spreadsheets. And when we got into Showflow, that was a life changer for me. I got 75% of my time back because I was doing everything else in spreadsheets. So
I guess from your perspective, working internally with teams, working with the C-suite and advocating, how much of what you advocate for is efficiency and technology improvements versus time and energy for the resources that they currently have and the people that are currently working there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they kind of run parallel. Like, I'll use the Pittsburgh Pirates for an example. One of Big Creative's first clients was the Pirates, and we were brought in because they only had like one full-time and one part-time person doing game presentation. And for a Major League Baseball team, the amount of shows you got to produce for that, that's just insane. So we came in to help support that, and they were still using spreadsheets too. So it's like low-hanging fruit, okay? You're understaffed. You need to get more efficient. Here's a piece of software that's going to streamline this process significantly. But while doing that, also saying like, this isn't going to solve all your problems. It's going to help put a Band-Aid on this one problem. You need to right-size your staff. So I took weeks distilling information on like, who were the Pirates equivalent clubs, like sister markets, same, you know, size team. Like I wouldn't want to compare the staff of the Dodgers to the Pirates because they're just not equal. So it's, you know, the Cleveland Guardians, the Cincinnati Reds, the Milwaukee Brewers, like grab some similar size teams and then do a comparison and show like, hey, the average amount of staff focusing on this piece of your business, and these teams are four people, five people, whatever it was, you've got 1.5. So we can fix your processes and your efficiencies, but you are significantly lower than your equals in the industry. So are you willing to do, you know, 20% of the business, whether it's sponsorship sales, 20% of the fan engagement where you're going to have repeat customers and tickets? When you start talking in ROI, especially mm-hmm. to business leaders, they go, oh shit. We're not willing to sacrifice that. So you know, I think that comes with time. Like I wasn't thinking about business stuff when I was even in like the first 10 years. I was just wanting to make the coolest content in the world.
Yep.
So that's a fun conversation to have because you can kind of trigger the business folks and going into like, oh yeah, like, well, yeah, we have these crazy business goals that we're not reaching. Well, because you're not supporting it with the proper software, the proper personnel, the proper processes. And what's great about what we, the position, the role that we play at Big Creative now is like, we just get to come in and advocate for the stuff that will help you reach your goals. And everybody has different goals. Maybe the Pirates' goals that season were to just get by and figure something out for the next year or whatever. And it's like, okay, then we're going to focus on figuring out how you can get by in the best way possible. But usually there's pretty aggressive business goals that these sports teams have. So we get to shine the light into the dark corners that a lot of internal creatives have already been saying these things. We need more staff. We're burnt out. We need more budget. Yeah. But for some reason, when you bring in the outside perspective and they say the exact same thing, budget shows
up. Well, they're just not working hard enough. You know, they could just, yeah. So
yeah,
I had a boss that always used to say that the third party was the great equalizer.
It's totally true.
There was no internal anything that it was an more unbiased opinion, I guess.
Well, not always unbiased. There's always, you know, we all have our own perspectives. And I think we at Big tend to lean more towards what's going to support the creatives because we know what it's like to be in their seat. But we also have the experience and the authority to be able to provide that perspective up the chain and say, like, listen, guys, we work with 20 other teams and they all have the same problem. Here's how you can beat this problem. And it's usually pretty well received.
I'm going to get controversial here. Well, not really. but you've been on both sides of it. And we'll get into advice to creatives later. But looking back on your journey, like you mentioned the first 10 years, you really didn't like focus on the business side of it, right? And for a lot of us who are skilled in things, whether it's videography, whether it's graphics, whether it's motion, whether it's like we spend so much time on the skill and the skill mastery, how can a person set themselves up for elevation? Because like on the collegiate athletic side, like everybody's like, oh, I don't want to be an AD. So I'm just trying to get to creative director or, you know, this piece. How can they change their mindset to get from just being one skill or, you know, now I've mastered all three of these skills to elevate to, because, you know, you talked about now those positions are becoming available in some places like chief content manager or associate athletic director for creative or, you know, production VP of production or all that. How can someone set their path to get into those type of seats?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. And I wish I had somebody, I think I was like inherently trying to do this because I had aspirations of growing in the industry, but I wish I had somebody kind of explain to me like, get involved in the meetings. Like, you know, what's tough is you need time to make and create and do, but being involved in whether it's like pitch meetings or internal brainstorms or whatever, like get exposed to the other parts of the business as quickly as you can. So you at least have the insight and the understanding of like community relations priorities, sponsorships priorities, ticket sales priorities. It's very easy to get stuck in the edit bay and only worry about what's most important on your screen and in your, you know, project queue. And there was like those first 10 years, I would be pulled into those meetings. And I remember being like very resistant, like, you know, inherently trying to protect my own time and my own to-do list, my own priorities. That was a big thing at the Miami Dolphins. I like everything was a priority, especially at that slice of time for the Dolphins. From 2015 to 2019, it was all about everything. And community relations was a huge point of focus for the organization, wanting to grow youth football. I mean, youth football is so massive in South Florida anyways, but, you know, focusing on growing that community initiatives that like they were coming to us asking for 30 deliverables a week to support their initiatives. And I remember being so frustrated with like, it doesn't do numbers on social. It's not engaging. It's not, you know, we put out a one-handed catch by Kenny Stills video. It's going to do crazy numbers. And then we put out this really impactful story about this community thing we did. And it does, you know, it's dwarfed in comparison. But what I failed to understand was like, they were working on building this use case over like a 4 or 5 year period. So when you eventually they have this whole body of work that they've done and an impact to the community and the millions of dollars and the lives changed and all that stuff. I was small minded. I was worried about like, now we got to get that sick Run the Jewels video out, not, you know, understanding that like this is a much broader, bigger initiative. So I think just going back to your question, give yourself the open-mindedness to like interface with other members of the organization and truly understand like, what are we trying to accomplish here? Because making sick videos is a part of it, but selling tickets, growing the brand, ushering in new fans, you know, that all, we don't get to make sick videos without all of the business objectives working and happening too. So it's, we're doing a big project right now with the New York Jets and in unison with Zero G. And, we just did 3 days of interviews on site with their entire staff, and certain pockets of the staff, you could tell like you guys are really, really hyper focused on your own goals and objectives, and that's fine. But I think that there's blind spots. You don't see what's happening in other places of the organization, and the understanding those things might actually help make you guys be even more valuable or do your job even better. So just being open to like interfacing with the rest of the organization and trying to understand like what's most important to them too, and how your priorities kind of stack up in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I think you highlighted an interesting point there too, because it's about communication from leadership though too. Like if you are running in your lane, quote unquote, your lane, and your job is video and that's what you focus on, and then people come to you with requests that feel like they're not as impactful or valuable based on what you understand without someone saying, hey, this is why this is important and this, we need to be doing this with this group, and without any of that understanding and knowledge and institutional knowledge from higher ups, it makes it really challenging to not feel like it's just a bunch of work and not how it's impacting the business.
100%. And I think, you know, we'll speak directly to like the director level people right now. It's there's a tightrope walk that you have to do between protecting your team and also letting them in on the why. Mm. Right? Like you don't need to let all the bullets that are flying hit them. That's what you're there for. And to kind of, sure. But at the same time, yeah, that's a great call out. And I'll go back to like the community relations thing at the Dolphins. We didn't understand that all of this was for something bigger. And had we known that, maybe we would have been a little bit more open to like all of their requests and how we could accommodate them. But yeah, that's a tough, being a director in the NFL was a hard place to be in, because you're taking it from both sides.
You might not necessarily have had that information either. So right. It's
a constant push and pull of information. And like you need to, if you're not a leader, you need to be curious and ask questions. If you are a leader, you need to be curious and ask questions, but also pass it on to the people that are asking or needing answers. I think just, yeah, purely communication and finding the time and space to have it is really important.
We talk about the balance of actually being in the position, but when an organization or an entity is hiring for someone to run a creative department or a video staff or whatever the thing may be, some people will go for skill. Some will go for, oh, well, this person is good on like organizational structure and management, but they have no creative, like,
they don't know what it's like to be in the seat.
Absolutely. They don't know what it takes. So it's just like we need to cover this thing, but they don't understand the other side of it. Mm-hmm. If you were an organization in that, what would you be like? What should these positions be, and why is that important to kind of have some knowledge on both? Because one of the things that you pointed out is, I talk about this a lot on here, is knowing the people around you, not just in the creative department, but in the in the communications, in marketing, in maintenance, in, you know, in the C-suite is so important, because you get the knowledge behind why are we doing this? Like, a community mm-hmm. event may not get 100,000 views and, you know, 10,000 likes, but the community impact is so much bigger. And like you said, for the Dolphins project, it wasn't just a now thing. It was, this is how we build this out over time. But I think people at the top don't do a great job all the time explaining that, like on the front end. They say, hey,
I already made the decision. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, this is what we're doing, right? So it's kind of a two-part question. What does that position need to be in skill sets, and how do we kind of bridge that gap?
If I was hiring for that position, I would look for somebody who, and this is hard because you can't predict this. You can't get this in an interview process. You have to work with people to see what their process is and how they communicate over time. But I would want to hire for somebody who was a tremendous communicator in a leadership position, who had to have had some sort of adjacent experience with the people that they're leading, but that are motivators and are great communicators and can block and tackle for their team and can set them up for success. Because especially in creative, like we should be hiring experts in some of the specific verticals, right? Like I'm going to hire the best photographer for my brand to be my team photographer, right? I'm not a photographer by trade, but I can manage that person well because I can understand what they have to go through somewhat on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. I can motivate them. I can explain the vision, and then I can let them go and do their thing. I think of it like as a NFL coaching tree. Like, you've got your head coach, and some head coaches, Dan Campbell, great motivator, former player, understands what it's like to be in, not an X's and O's guys, at least on paper. So you've got, at least last year, Ben Johnson as a creative offensive coordinator, and you've got Aaron Glenn as an experienced defensive coordinator. Let them do their thing and manage their leadership people. But you got to be a motivator. You got to be a communicator. You got to instill trust in the team. So I think, to answer your question, like I would look for somebody who had adjacent experience, but showed true like leadership and growth and just general understanding of the business goals and everything that we were trying to accomplish as a whole, but also being able to empower those people on their team to do what they do best, but give them guidance, give them support, et cetera. Bridging the gap is it goes up to the top. And like, we see this with different teams that we work with. We you know, you think that like, why would a company hire a big creative? It's like, oh, because they have a big hole to fill, which is sometimes it. The Arizona Cardinals, a great example. They had a split with their head of event presentation during week 3 of the season last year, and they needed that hole filled immediately. So I stepped in and was their show caller, but also it was my role to like help grow and support the team, so they were heading in the right direction whenever the new person came in. We work with a lot of teams that like have their shit together. They're like really good, but they're looking for that next level or that next thing that kind of could help break up the monotony of like the cyclical nature of sports seasons. Like, mm-hmm. keep doing the same thing. Schedule release or draft, schedule release, OTAs, preseason, regular season, playoffs, start the process over again. So I think like, to bridge that gap, leadership needs to be aware that it's my job to inspire and communicate and set expectations. And I need to expect that of my C-suite. And those people need to expect that of their VPs, onward and downward. And the organizations that are a mess internally lack internal leadership from the top down. It's clear as day. Like, when we start working with people, like, that's the problem. And I don't know, there will be pockets that get better based on different C-suite levels or VPs that come in, but that's the problem. And unless they have a massive change of heart or they have a leadership team that can give them feedback, I don't know if things get tremendously better company-wide until that problem gets solved. Certainly not going to name any names, but it's, you know, I think we've all been in positions where we're like, there's a leadership issue that I'm going to have to swim upstream against to circumvent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it goes back to what you were also talking about earlier, where we had this digital social evolution, I guess you could call it, right? In that pocket of time. And now social's even taken on a bigger evolution in the last handful of years as well. And I've seen a lot of social media people posting like that they're doing the jobs of multiple people. And it feels like it's a little bit cyclical in that way too. So it just feels like that there's a lot of challenges that are getting faced by teams that I think a lot of teams are still trying to rectify or figure out what the best solution is. And some of them, I think, have it figured out. I think most haven't, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about that and what I think is happening there. So those teams who are overworking people or who are certain people are going to have multiple jobs. I mean, I had it at multiple stops in my career.
Same here. Yep.
I think we all have. Yep. Those organizations will continue to have constant turnover. They're always going to be, you know, people are going to be leaving those roles where they're feeling used and abused and they don't have the support that they need. So they're going to look for another opportunity elsewhere. And the churn will continue to happen. I'd do it for free, honestly, to do like a deep dive with a sports team or a handful of sports teams and measure the cost of turnover. Because I truly feel like so many organizations spend out the nose to rehire or refill and move and all that stuff when like maybe a $10,000 raise would have kept that person there. It would be a really interesting, I know other industries have done the exercise, but like how much money is the sports industry spending on turnover? And is that just a part of the problem? Is that, you know, is that just a part of the industry and it's factored into budgets every year and it's going to be what it is? Or are organizations recognizing this issue and investigating the issue, putting solutions in place so the turnover doesn't continue? There should be a natural amount of turnover for upward mobility and weeding out people who aren't the right fit. But I'd be really curious to see like how that gets fixed. I do think that people like us who are continuing to move up in the industry, and even from like an outside perspective, we're going to be more proactive about that. And like, hey, we need to support these people differently, or we need to restructure the department, or we need to find more budget. One thing that has changed tremendously in this industry is I think creative teams are starting to be more willing to ask for outside help. And that's new. I mean, that's what's our whole business model relies on, being able to support creatives from the outside in. And leadership, whether it's people like us who have moved up and know that that's what it takes, or you bring in people from outside industries, you know, we got a lot of like tech and merchandise CMOs that have come in leadership positions that understand that like it's normal for consultants to exist in those worlds. And even like sales teams. I mean, every single sports team that I worked for, there are sales coaches and consultants that come in to help make their sales teams better. Why wouldn't that exist for creatives and content and event presentation? And I think that the willingness to work with outside support is not only extremely crucial and necessary to like the health and wellness of this industry, but it's just so valuable that like, why wouldn't you budget for, you know, outside support? All of us are examples of like the value that outside support can bring to even like one member of the internal creative team, but usually it's more than that. So I think the willingness to embrace help, you know, we all check our egos a little bit and go like, yeah, I mean, I'm doing my best, but like maybe things could get better. So let's try and work with Big Creative, or let's try and work with Baller, or let's try and work with whomever, because that's gonna give us an edge and it's gonna take some of the weight off of our shoulders.
That is an amazing point, because I think that, you know, I personally think that, you know, going back to what you said about it used to be a slither of the departments, right? Like, oh, the video board or the website were the only creative industry. Now, this is still fairly new. Like when you look at the creative departments, we're less than 25 years old. And for some of them, they're less than 10 years old. So it's still a lot of trying to figure that out. And so some of them have been very kind of slow to try to get it figured out, because it's like, you know, internal structure, especially for creative, is important as well. And I want to ask you a question about that. But just to get this point out, it's like a lot of people are like, oh, we need a creative staff. Let's hire one person and then give them three bodies. And that's all we should need. It's like, do you know that that's what you need? Or are you just setting a small budget to say, oh, well, this is what we can cut trim off to create something? But do you agree that this is still too new for them to like prioritize that this needs to be figured out, so that A, you don't have a lot of churn, and two, you're getting the very best product of what you, and three, they don't understand that this is a huge money opportunity as well. Like, creative is, you can make money off of your creative and marketing and, you know, broadcast and production department.
Yeah. I think we saw it in Miami during that period between 2015 and 2019, where like we shifted from being a liability to being an asset. Like, the money that was coming in off of the work that we were doing, we had the data to back it up. I actually think, like, to answer your question, that's the newest part, is like analytics and understanding the ROI or the CPM for a certain product, or like truly wrapping your business minds around the products that you're offering, whether it's digital content or in-game content or commercials or cross promotions or whatever. I think like a lot of teams have finally started to invest in like a business analytics team, even if it is like a couple of people and some software. They're starting to mine the data and make sense of it. Whereas like return on ticket sales, they've got a century's worth of data mm-hmm. on that stuff. But I think a lot of folks would just throw money, a small pocket of money at a budget and say like, we know we need to be on social media. I know my kids, if I'm the CEO of whomever, my kids are going to bug me if they don't see our team posting TikToks. Like, we got to get a TikTok team or whatever. that was the drive behind investing in these things. Whereas like, again, it's on our generation of like leaders, emerging leaders, to paint a clear picture on like, if you want to hit this goal, it's going to cost this much in investment to try and hit this goal. Like, we're going to have to invest upfront in these people and this equipment and this strategy and all that. And that's what we're going to do to try and attack that goal and hopefully exceed that goal. But you can't do it the other way around. And I think, unfortunately, that's the way it's been done mm-hmm. since mm-hmm. social media existed. It's like you get peaks and valleys and like, oh man, that idea went viral. We crushed that. And now we're this.
And we should just do that. Right.
Right. And it's right. Like, let's keep doing that. Yeah. I think it's being proactive instead of being reactive.
Absolutely.
And even from a budget and a business and a strategy standpoint, we're so used to just being underwater constantly. And we got another game coming up and we got another this coming up. And like, it just never ends. You're constantly in the rat race of the new season. And that, like, again, going back to like what we're doing now with Zero G, is like we're going to come in and we're going to work with your entire organization, but also your creative team specifically, to come up with next year's plan mm-hmm. right now. Because we know it's coming. Mm-hmm. So let's start really digging in for the next 6 months to build out something that like you guys can go attack next year. The internal team doesn't have the bandwidth to do that work right now because they're always underwater. So like, what can we do to provide you with just a little bit of relief? So either you can do that part or we can do that part. You choose. We're going to take this crap off your plate so you've got more room for something. And I think that that's the big differentiator for like those who have it figured out, which is still so new, but maybe they were 6 months more proactive on budgeting and planning and whatever.
I got a question for both of you, because you've both led creative teams on a pro level, both now work outside of entities. And Justin, you kind of touched on this earlier, but like when you bring in that outside help, right, the third party help, when even the thought or the practice of bringing in outside help, did that hurt or help the morale of the team? Because like, yeah, like, oh, we're swamped in doing all this stuff, but like internally, you would rather do the video board, you know, yourself if that was the outside help. Or, you know, you think that, oh, well, I'd rather be doing this thing that they're bringing somebody else in. And why don't we have someone else bring?
I think people do it wrong. There are a few different reasons why you outsource content. One, you don't have the internal capabilities. Two, your internal capabilities are tapped out. But there's also something that I think teams don't think about, and that's the third option, which is you have the internal capacity, but you still want to outsource. I always wanted to bring people in and have our internal team work with those people. Mm-hmm. Like if you bring in a really good DP and let your team work with that DP, they're going to pick up new ideas, new ways of doing things, how to light, how to shoot that maybe I wasn't as good at and didn't know as much about because of all the different jobs that we had. So my goal with bringing people in wasn't for them just to take over something and do it all themselves, like on the other, you know, on the other side of the wall where we weren't privy to it, is how can I bring somebody in to help my team get better too, where we're getting a really good output, but we're also growing and creating opportunities for our internal team to take that over and take the next step. And then maybe when we get the opportunity to promote them, we can bring someone else underneath. And it's just like a global thought process of improvement, and not necessarily like I'm earmarking this money to be outsourced. It's growth and development across the board.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think that like when you say like people are doing it wrong, I think that's the underlying thing here, is the point we got to make is that it's being sold internally wrong, upwards and downstream, like to your team. Great example, like bringing in a talented DP to like come own this thing. But also part of the expectation is like, you're going to show my team what you're doing and why you're doing it. And they're going to learn a ton by working with you on this project. Inversely, when you're trying to pitch that and maintain the budget to get that outside help, you got to sell it up to leadership that like there's going to be a long-term return on this investment because the team's going to get better. They're going to get smarter. And also, what's the alternative if we don't bring in outside help?
Mm-hmm. You have to keep paying outside help to do it all.
Exactly. And also, it's the internal team. Great. You want to own this huge project. What's your time to do that based on all the other stuff I have for you to do? It's just going to make your life hell. You might feel like the ability to own it, but like, how about we get some support that lets you, that does it with you, that provides you some relief and some guides and some support. That's a huge part of the narrative that I think gets forgotten about. And then senior leadership goes, well, what am I paying you guys for if we got to go outside help? Mm-hmm. Got to educate them. Got to say like, you're paying us to do all this other stuff that we have to do. We're paying them to do this next thing or strive further or get better or get smarter. So I love going back to like the sales team model. Honestly, we experienced that at the Dolphins. So they brought in, they redid Hard Rock Stadium, and then it was like, okay, we're going to bring in the Miami Open Tennis Tournament. Whole new weeks long of multi-engagement event that is now on campus that Hard Rock Stadium owns. Great. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to bring in F1 Miami. Weeks long, mm-hmm. you know, global race and all the things that come with it. And then they also had the International Champions Cup summer soccer tournament that was owned by the same ownership team. They added sales teams for each of those entities, between 20 and 40 people. How many creatives did we add to support those things?
Two.
Zero.
No. I was being generous. but it's because the business are the same. Same at the Celtics. Our CEO came up through sales. Mm-hmm. So he sees and understands the sales side of things. Mm-hmm. And that's how everything was viewed, was from the purview of sales.
Right.
So they understand that side of it.
Which is, I understand that because you unless you can't make money off of it, there's no point in doing it to some degree. That's the long-term game that all of these sports organizations are trying to accomplish. And, but like, as our generation becomes leaders, we need to grasp onto the data and the analytics and show the value of the work we're doing. We brought Reich as a project management software in at the Dolphins. And I had I loved Reich. I used it at Van Wagner 2 years prior to coming to the Dolphins. And it allowed me to stay in lockstep with the production team in Los Angeles while I was on site with the team here in Arizona. So like, we're all in the same system, approvals. I'm doing it on my phone. Like, it's great. Bring that into the Dolphins, because we're making 100 pieces of video content a week. I got to keep track of all this crap somehow. And the one thing that I was really trying to impart on the team was like, use the time tracking function. And all of the creatives, for the most part, except for one guy, looked at that as like Big Brother. Oh, you want to track how much time it takes me to make this thing? Mm-hmm.
That's such a creative thing right there.
I know, right? It's like, it's because you shouldn't be under time constraints when you're trying to make art. Mm-hmm. Like that. But unfortunately, that's a factor sometimes. And so, but the reason why I was so aggressive on pushing that was, at the end of the year, I wanted to have the data to go to my leadership team and say, we spent 56% of our time making community content and the return on investment was whatever you tell me it was. Like, I wanted to have the data to say, like, what are we investing our time in and what's the return on it, either from a brand perspective, from a revenue perspective, whatever. But the team, like, you get out what you put into those programs, and they just weren't willing to do it because they thought that we were trying to manage their time. And it's like, no, I'm trying to manage your ability to make great stuff, but I need the data to be able to support that argument. So you're just like embracing the information that you have, embrace the business side of it, and just be open-minded to like what the true value and impact is that you have. And you might surprise yourself that mm-hmm. like what you think is important is a lot less important from on the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with that time tracker or timekeeping thing, is like being a person that is like anti-timekeeping, understanding that, right? Like, hey, everything, there's a reasoning, there's a why behind everything. Because if we can say, hey, this is what we spend this amount of time, it's about the data, but kind of not in the middle of the storm, but before the storm comes, it's like, hey, this is why we're doing these things or going to implement this. And it's all for our benefit. None of this is to micromanage. None of this is to like keep a, you know, a strangle on you, to like hold you in place. Like, oh, I need to know what they're doing at all times so I can go in the board meeting and say, oh, well, my team is doing this at this moment. No. Effective communication and explanations before, like you said, being proactive instead of reactive. As creators, we don't like things just thrown on us. We just don't, right? We're all in that boat. It's like, oh, this just came up. Like, no, it didn't just come up.
You know, we've all heard that one too many times.
We've heard it a lot of times, right? So
Wait, you have everything booked. There's a car service for somebody to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's a playground that needs to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're a little over an hour into it, and we haven't necessarily talked exactly about what Big Creative does. So I maybe that's a good place to jump in and have you explain why you started Big and what you do on a day-to-day basis with teams around different leagues.
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to share our story. So Big was born out of honestly the heels of COVID. So I had left the Dolphins in January 2019 and needed a break from sports, wanted to start a family and kind of focus on my life a little bit more outside of the crazy hours that sports gave me the 15 years prior to that. COVID happens the following spring. We have our first child in June of 2020, which was a wild time to bring a child into the universe. But we did. And obviously everything shuts down in sports. I was working in healthcare marketing at the time, which was very unsexy, but it was stable. And it was an industry that was not impacted by COVID. And so that gave me the safety and the kind of security to keep working on my business and things like that. And I was starting to get calls in 2021 from former friends and colleagues in the industry about jobs to come back in the sports. A lot of shifting and changing had happened based on layoffs and furloughs and people deciding to leave the industry during COVID. So opportunities were popping up, and for one reason or another, it just wasn't the right fit to, you know, didn't want to move to this city or wasn't quite the right role or whatever. And I was, we live in Phoenix now, and my wife and I took a long weekend in Las Vegas. I think it was like our first trip together alone without the kid since we had our son. And I was there with her, and I turned down a great job with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then the whole drive home, I was like, I know I can help them. Like there's some really easy ways that I can help impact their team and their business. And I wish I could take the role, but we're just not going to move to Pittsburgh right now. And she was like, then just come up with a way to help them. Like, if you think you can help them, then figure it out. And so I kind of put together this business model that would allow me to essentially bolt myself onto any of the creative leadership teams. And like we talked about before, like, how can I take some stuff off your plate? Or how can I support your team? Or how can I help you in this rebuild phase that you're in? Based on the 15 years of knowledge and experience that I have, like, I can quickly just jump in. I know who all your key players are. I know who to go to for this, that, and the other, because I've been in your seat. And I soft sold that business model to a bunch of my friends in the industry. And within a month, I had 4 clients. They were like, yes, love that. Let's do that. And so it was really just me as a consultant initially. The Las Vegas Raiders were a great first client. It's a short flight for me to Phoenix to Vegas. So when they started bringing fans in 2021 to brand new Allegiant Stadium that had sat vacant for a year, they went big. They went hard every single game because it's Vegas and it's a new thing. So they needed some help. So I was with them. I ended up getting the Pirates as a client, which was cool because they were the inspiration for it at the beginning. And a few other teams that I was working with that kind of gave me a foundation to leave my full-time role in healthcare and really focus on, like, okay, I think I can be a hands-on consultant. I think that was like the difference is, like, I was willing to get my hands dirty. You need me to, like, go recruit for a position. You need me to build your project management software. You need me to edit versions of crap that, like, you don't have an intern to help on, like, whatever, send it my way. I'm just happy to help support you guys however I can. And that kind of snowballed into, like, okay, you can consult and you can support us in this way, which is great. Can you also make stuff? And I had been editing content and, you know, doing enough to be a dangerous shredder or whatever throughout my career that I could jump into a lot of different things. So I started making stuff, but then also consulting with, you know, Justin, I've reached out to you for projects for certain clients that have come out, and Robbie Kujath and some of these other, you know, independent entities and businesses that have been built over the last few years. That's like, I know a lot of people in the industry and I can kind of find the right solution for my clients in certain situations. They trust me to own it. So Big has kind of grown into like a network of people that we can tag in different moments. But really over the last couple of, I'd say about the last 18 months is where we've really kind of grown and found our foundation. We added John Willey as our chief creative officer, who we talked about before, has been my creative confidant and partner for basically my whole career. He owns the high level, big picture creative ideation stuff. He is such a multi-talented creative. He's one of the best photographers, sports photographers in the world, but he can also like make a replica of PNC Park out of gingerbread if he wanted to. Like, he just does crazy creative stuff. He's artistic. He's musical. We've written original music for some of our clients that they've used in different things. So it's like, he's super talented and a huge part of our team. We added Kevin Thompson, who is a motion graphic specialist. He used to work for the Arizona Coyotes, only team he ever worked for. And we all know what a mess the Coyotes were and no longer are. So what I love about Kevin is, like, he's young, he's open to new ideas, he's coachable. And so, like, we scooped him up, and he's been a huge, tremendous help to just do high level, but also, like, you know, versioning and different support for teams when it comes to motion graphics. And then this past January, we just added Kelly Heinley as our head of experience and entertainment. She was with the Las Vegas Raiders, and also I worked with her at the Miami Dolphins. She she was essentially the manager of entertainment for the Raiders. She worked with all their special musical performers, special guests, anthem singers. She's very great with like logistics, working with celebrities, taking an event and making it better. And I needed a help with a project with the Arizona Cardinals last year where she came in and owned. We did a special halftime show with Andy Grammer, and I needed her or somebody to own that project for me. So, because we didn't have the support staff to really facilitate a performance like that, brought her in. She killed it. And I was like, okay, you're coming to be a part of Big Creative because what you do is super valuable to our partners too. So all that to be said, we are a small team of four, very talented, very experienced. We've got over 65 years of front office experience combined. And I think that that's a special value prop that we add is like, we know what it's like to be in your seats. We know what your ownership expects, your CEO expects. We know what it's like. And so we can advocate for you. We can help build a case. We can help solve problems very quickly. We like to say to our clients, like, give us 10 yards and we'll run the ball the next 90 yards. Like, get us up to speed. Tell us what you're dealing with. What's your problems? What are your major headwinds? And we'll come up with a solution pretty quickly and we'll get it done for you. And it's all in the name of like supporting the business of sport from the outside in. We love this industry and the people that make it up. That's the best part about working in sports. I think all of us would agree that like the friendships that we make and being in the trenches with people and making magic happen despite crazy odds in some situations is what keeps us going and why we love being a part of these magical moments in sports. And so now we get to just be helpful. We get to solve problems. Sometimes we get to do really crazy big ideas. Like the Seattle Seahawks reached out to us last year and they were like, we want to be the first halftime drone show in NFL history. We don't have time to figure out what we're going to do. Can you own this for us? And I said, hell yeah, we'll figure it out. So I from this seat over multiple nights, you know, last off season, I came up with a show that would be engaging on the video boards and the drones. There would be live performers and we choreographed this super tight 13-minute multi-sensory drone show and they did it. And it was the first ever NFL halftime drone show. And it was a massive success, but like they didn't have the bandwidth to do that. And they didn't have the creative, even energy to like pour their ideas into this thing. So they commissioned it to us and said like, can you just help us accomplish this? And so that's why we exist. It's what we do. We do things as small as, you know, a specific sponsor in-game engagement. You know, we turned the Carolina Panthers stadium into a giant roulette wheel for Bojangles. That was just like a random thing. Hey, we have this idea. Can you do it in 7 days? And we said, yep, we'll figure it out. Or we've done team intro videos like the Carolina Panthers and the Las Vegas Raiders. So we've got lots of potential service offerings, but it's really just in the name of like, how can we help support creative teams, do things bigger, do things better, and be that like backbone, outside backbone that can come in and just prop them up and help them shine. So it's been great. It's super fulfilling. We've got clients in almost all the major leagues right now, but the NFL is our big one just based on our recent history and working in the NFL. We're going to keep on doing it.
That's amazing. When you think about it, there are a lot of people who are, you know, you pointed out that you left the industry in 2019, kind of burned out. But that's a story that a lot of people have, right? Like either the industry left them or they had to leave the industry wanting to start a family, but you're in this industry where you're around the clock. Do you think that it's possible on a grand scale for you to be able to start a family and be successful at being a family person working in this type of environment? And people do it, but it's always a strain in a sense if there's no like kind of boundaries with that.
I think it's possible, but it's very challenging. And you have to have a spouse who either also worked in the industry, so they have some understanding of like the demand and the needs, mm-hmm. especially when you're in season, or they're very independent and supportive of what you do. Because I know that if the shoe were on the other foot, I would have had a really hard time with the schedule, you know, being changed. So it's possible, but man, you gotta have such clear understanding and teamwork. One of my first bosses used to, and this is like seared into my brain, used to do a save the marriage trip as soon as the season ended. Like he called it that in the office. He would like take his wife somewhere for 10 days and like, man, like the weight of that phrase mm-hmm. was like really imprinted on me. And it was early in my career. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to budget for saving my marriage after the end of every season. Cause that's how this thing goes. Like so many of my leaders, I mean, it's just a statistical thing, but like, end in divorce. Right. And, I've seen my friends go through it and it's hard. It is a hard thing, but it's possible for sure. It's hard.
And the other piece of that question is, you have a lot of people who are leaving just to have, you know, they want to create work-life balance or more financial, opportunity. But we do it, and we kind of talked about this before we got started, is like the word freelance. Oh, I'm going to, go full-time freelance instead of building it into an actual business entity. Like, how do you suggest that people should kind of build a more of a business versus a freelance? Because freelance sometimes comes with a price ceiling, right? Oh, yeah, we'll get this freelance motion designer or freelance be a person that only pay them this. How did you kind of navigate through not just creating a freelance opportunity, but an actual business trusted entity with all of this experience that you're bringing to the table?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing that allowed me to mentally get over the hurdle of like leaving my full-time job in healthcare marketing and starting big was when I sat down and actually created a business model. And like, I saw that, like, here's the service I'm going to provide. Here's how much I'm going to charge for it. And here's how much business I need to like maintain my cost of living. That gave me clarity. And that gave me like some guardrails to like play within and know that like, this is what I'm going to do. So I think a lot of times when people are freelancer, it's like, and it is gig-based work that we're doing, but like you kind of stick yourself into a gig-based box. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to have to chase the gig constantly. I'm always going to have my schedule available. And at some point you just return to the lifestyle that you had before. You're just not having to waste time in meetings anymore. You're still working crazy hours and, you know, odd hours and whatnot. So you're not really getting that balance. You're maybe getting the control that you desired because you get to say yes or no to things. But I think ultimately, like designing a business model for yourself and just understanding, like, this is who I am, what I'm trying to accomplish, and what it's going to pay me to do it is a really important first step that I think people don't take the time to go through. And it took me a long time to get to the point where I did that too. I also think that, like, the individual and the individual creative has gotten, has grown traction over time, where like sports Twitter, obviously we've got a lot of individuals and personalities and individual brands. Even if you are working for this team, you kind of have your own little creative corner of the world that you're showcasing your work in. I know Gondola has obviously like made the individual creator a bit more apparent and obvious versus the team branded content that gets out there. So there's that is a factor in it. So you can kind of start to build your own brand, but at the same time, like, be very conscious of creating a business model that you feel safe and secure in, that you are committed to, that you're proud of, that you believe in. And that I think will raise your value from the outside in. It will, you know, bring some validity to what you're trying to accomplish. Even if you're just like, I'm so-and-so and I'm a DP and I'm a killer DP, then but you've branded it and you've created something that people can kind of grasp onto and understand that you're not just a small piece of the puzzle that we're going to pay nothing to come do this thing and you're lucky to work with us type thing. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, no. It does. Because, yeah. You know, it's as someone who, you know, kind of started the business kind of out of necessity, it's always different. Like it's one thing to like chase the opportunity, right? Like, oh, I'm going to leave this job with the Dolphins and I'm going to go start my own company, but don't really think about what you want out of it. And you make a really good point is like, yes, you get the freedom per se, but if you're always chasing the gig, then you find yourself working way more hours, working with a lot less support, because if you have a full-time job with an organization, you get healthcare benefits, you get vacation time, you get all of these things. But when you're working for yourself and you are the company and you're the CEO, you're the accountant, you're the marketing person, you're the social part, if you build it that way in a freelance way, you find yourself like working 15 jobs. And sometimes you won't even make what you made at the previous gig. So it I think for those out here listening who are thinking about, oh, I'm going to go full-time freelance, it's like the opportunity has to be there as well. Like it's so many freelancers, like you can, especially with the invention of Fiverr and Upwork and all this.
Mm-hmm.
What is going to separate you from the rest of the crowd to actually be recognized as a, you know, for people to take you serious and pay you what you're actually worth on a consistent basis. And, you know, you may be making six figures now and didn't as a, you know, videographer, but how much did you have to put in to become, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze, as some people
yeah.
say?
I think that if you take the time to sit down and actually craft a business plan and, you know, go through that process, identify, give yourself a mission statement, give yourself goals, do a market competition analysis, know like what else and, you know, who am I competing against and what are they providing? What sets me apart? And then being convicted in what it is that you're trying to do. That I do think that made it easier for me to get big off the ground is because I had that kind of model in my head. And I went to my friends or I went to my former colleagues and I said, like, this seems really valuable to me. Do you agree? And they were like, yeah, hell yeah. Cause I knew it was something I wish that I had mm-hmm. when I was, you know, in the seat. So if you believe in it, if you know that there's value there, you can go sell it and you can go, you know, you can go make it happen. But it's worth going through the process of like understanding the risk versus the reward. Like you said, is the juice worth the squeeze? That's a great phrase. And I think it even goes back to what we said about like when you're in the front office, like take the time to think through why we're doing these things and make sure that you've got your pros and cons figured out. You understand what the potential ROI is, and then you know that will guide you towards your decision.
And I like how you mentioned like you chose, instead of just being like a person that could help them with edits or being a shooter, helping them solve problems. Like the problem solver, they, you know, from all of our experience, like Justin, even with the templates and all the things that you do and provide, if you can solve solutions and get them to understand, it's like, oh, here's the problem that you not solve solutions. If you can provide solutions for problems, they're willing to throw a checkbook at you, right? Like for me, I'm in more of an events space right now where I, you know, provide content for this, blah, blah, blah. But just thinking ahead is like, you don't, like if you're a freelance videographer, if you keep yourself in that box, they're only going to come to you when they have an event that needs to be covered and there's a ceiling. But if you say, hey, you're an event company, you have all of these, here's how I think you can even up your package for what you're offering. And you can also, you know, contract us to do X, you know, 50 events a year out of your 100, you're providing more of a solution. You already got it broken down. And hey, not only from a video standpoint, but we also have all of these other entities that we can take off of your hands. You don't have to figure this out. Instead of just saying, hey, you can pay me $300 to go take photos over here. Like how many $300? And I'm just using that as a starter kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. How many of those do you have to do to make ends meet? How many do you have to, you know, do? How many gigs do you have to do to get to like the goal of what you actually want to? But then you also got to consider the taxes. You got to, the benefits. Like, it's so much that I don't think people consider. And, you know, now being in the seat of an entrepreneur is like, how much more information could we probably have all used before we even took that step, right?
100%. I love that. Like, in your role, there's so much value. Like, yes, you're solving a problem when they come to you to cover an event or produce content or whatever it is. But if you take the time to communicate with your clients and get to know their business and understand what their goals and objectives are and show that you're willing to also make those your goals and objectives, that's where the problem solving goes down the road and they see the long-term value in working with you. Like, we very rarely do spec work. We definitely do it. I think it's valuable and it's important, but we don't do it as like a first project. Mm. We'll do spec work with a client that we've worked with in other ways. And the reason why is we cannot be as impactful as getting to know your team, understanding your processes, finding other ways to provide you with solutions, even if it's out of scope. Like, we're still going to do it because it's going to make you better and it's going to build trust and it's probably going to turn into future business for us too. But like, at the end of the day, that's the most fulfilling thing to all of us at BIC, is that we want to make your team happier, your business more valuable, your content more impactful. Like, we just want to, we said this earlier, like, high tides raise all ships. So like, how can we do that through the creative team in a way that impacts the rest of the business and we leave a place better than we found it, even if it's for a small project, you know? And more often than not, it happens, but it takes us being willing to kind of reach out and say like, hey, we want to do more than you're asking us to do because we believe in the value here. And then it takes them trusting us and giving us the information we need to provide solutions.
We're going to play a little game here to kind of take the edge off a little bit. So we give you 30 seconds and we're going to give you a topic and you got to name as many things you can based on the topic. Your subject is not big creative. We're going to create another entity based on all these things we talked about. If you were building a team with an unlimited budget for like a creative department, what would be the positions that you would definitely want to include? So I'm going to give you 5 seconds to kind of think about that. But
you're
building a team, you don't really have a, like, you got an unlimited budget. You can build it out with this. And basically the premise of this is, what are all the things that are definitely necessary to build out a successful creative team?
Okay.
So you ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. I'm going to sandwich this with the most important thing to factor in here for everybody, which is, what are the goals and objectives of the creative team? I don't know. So I'm going to go off of what I think. We're going to need an executive creative director who's going to lead the vision and the entire department overall as a whole. We need a head of video. We need a head of photography. We need a head of graphic design and art direction. We need a head of motion design and art direction. We need the amount of support staff for each of those entities based on whatever our goals and objectives are for this department. And then we also need budget for interns and part-time support to help with the ebb and flow of all those things. So, again, most important thing, what are the goals and objectives that we're trying to accomplish? Because that will truly dictate what your staff should be.
And that's your time. I actually gave you a little extra time because I felt like that beginning was very necessary. And
for
so,
sure.
Because it does depend on what are your goals and objectives. And I think that a lot of departments around, especially ones that I've been in, like, they begin with just, oh, let's just get the bodies. Let's just get some bodies in here. But then as the year goes on, they're like, oh, but we want to add this thing. It's like, okay, but you didn't hire this person for this. And so now they're like, oh, they're just dumping extra work, because in every job description, it says other duties as assigned.
Right. Yeah. It's making arbitrary budget decisions or hires is a recipe for disaster. And I like a great example of a big, big project that happens for every sports team in every sports league, big or small, is like your campaign spot or your team intro video. Mm-hmm. The biggest creative jewel in your crown for the season. And we bid on them all the time, whether we're bidding on them as the creative leadership that would then outsource the production to execute it, or partnering with a production team like a Lead Edge or somebody like that. But what happens is they give us an open brief, and then they give us a budget. And my constant struggle is, do you want me to give you the best idea for this brief, or do you want me to give you an idea that you can execute with this budget? And more often than not, they'll ask us to present both. And
that's because the budget doesn't match the idea. Is that what you're saying?
99% of the time, it doesn't. I can't work off of a budget when you're asking me to solve a problem that doesn't necessitate that budget, right? So like with the Raiders and the Carolina Panthers, we presented what we felt was the best idea, and they went and found budget to make it happen. And we were super proud of that work, and hopefully take home a few Emmys and idea awards and things like that. But the most important thing was like they achieved the intended result in stadium, which was to get the crowd to pop before the team took the field. It's the whole goal of that thing. But had we worked with the original budget that was in the RFP, it would have never happened. Mm-hmm. So what are your goals and objectives? If you can clearly define those things, the rest will follow suit. But we don't, as creatives, often enough start there and really suss that stuff out.
I also love that the whole business is built off of the idea that you had challenges when you were there, and it was something that you wish you would have had an opportunity or somebody to help support when you were in that position. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the basis of a good business.
If I could clone myself, man, this would be so nice. And that's what we're trying to offer. It's like, you know, we can help be you when you don't have time to be you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
All right. We'll wrap with this. You've been a lot of places. You've probably made a lot of hires and, you know, raised a lot of people around the industry, whether they were interns or, you know, early entry. And this industry is still filled with a lot of probably younger talent now than I often say that the generation now is probably the most talented generation that we've seen, because they have access to, you know, everything and YouTube University and all the things. But what's some of the best advice that you can give to up and coming creatives to find longevity and careers in the creative space and sports industry?
For sure. I would say be willing to be open-minded. Don't try and push your own agenda. Like, stick true to like what got you to that point, and know, be confident in your skills, but also be open to learning more, and be open to not just learning more creatively, but like about the business. I think if you are able to find time to interface with different departments and understand their overarching goals and objectives, it's only going to make you more valuable. Even if you just choose to stay on the one path that you're on, it's going to make you more valuable because you're going to have a broader knowledge of what it is you contribute to the organization as a whole. I would say the sooner you are able to wrangle your own ego, and I'm talking to younger Will right now as much as anybody else, like that will only make you more valuable. Like, yes, you have to believe in yourself and you have to know that you're talented and that you work hard and those things, but check your ego at the door, because sometimes it's just about what's the best work and what's best for the team or the brand or whatever in that moment. So, you know, be willing to like set your ego aside sometimes and go like, you know what, that is a better idea, or I don't have to do this today. I mean, there's so many great artists and musicians and movie directors and writers who have to go back to a project that they started 15 years ago because it just wasn't the right time for that thing to get made. Like James Cameron couldn't make Avatar because the camera didn't exist. He had to wait to do that. So it's like, be patient, you know, stick true to yourself and be open-minded. I think that those are the things that I wish I would have learned and embraced a lot earlier. But sometimes you kind of got to learn those lessons the hard way.
You hit the nail on the head. It's like a lot of us, like what we're doing is a lesson learned to ourselves, to our younger selves, and trying to kind of like course correct. Like none of us want to be the bad bosses that we may have had, or none of us want to like have small staffs, or, you know, we couldn't have the best gear over here when I was this age. So now we ensure that we have, you know, the things. So I always tell people this is learn as much as you can everywhere you go. Because, and that's the people, because if you are a video or a designer or whoever in a creative, spend some time. It doesn't have to be a whole lot learning what other people do. So that if you do decide to get on this side and become an entrepreneur, a business owner, you know what type of people you need and you know what they actually do. You're not just filling 300 roles just because, oh, I got to have this staff. Like actually know what you want them to do and what they actually do to help you. So Will, thank you for spending your Good Friday with us good gentlemen, and hopefully people get as much as they need out of this episode.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And if anybody, I do this occasionally on LinkedIn, but like my messages are open. You know, if you want advice, you have questions, you have a problem you're trying to solve, I'm always available for a chat. So please don't hesitate to reach out. If you're having troubles internally in the front office you're working in and you want some advice, or if you're starting your own thing, I'm happy to help however I can. So thank you guys both. This is awesome. I know we could yammer on for another however long, but appreciate you guys taking the time today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.